The following program is being brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit SeventhWaveNetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
Spirit of Film Conversations. I'm your host, Randall Libero. Movies and media are changing the way we think, live, relate, and dream. So each week, we talk to media pioneers and also showcase today's independent and visionary filmmakers whose movies evoke what I call the spirit of film, which is a metaphor for the movie's magical power to transform our lives. Well, welcome back, my friends, to the show that never ends. We're so glad you could attend. That's how a book that's titled Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies. And we're going to talk about this book and about all the history of films and the growth of this idea in the mind of its author, Brent Marchant. So Brent is with us today, and I want to tell you a little bit about his background. He's a film essayist, and I'm very grateful to recommend this work of literary journalism to anyone who wants to explore the art of the story in films and apply it to the process of spiritual awakening in their own lives. I feel that in the annals of film essayists, Brent ranks right up there with the best in my book, going as far back as James Agee, and along with Richard Schickel, Pauline Kael, Leonard Maltin. But he relates films and their meaning and importance in a way that no previous writer, I feel, has ever done before. So, Brent, welcome to the program.
Well, thank you so much for having me on the show, Randall, and thank you for that wonderful introduction. That's some great company that you put me in there with.
Well, I really thoroughly enjoyed your book, as I was saying to you before we got on the air here. It's a book that I would have been proud myself to have written, but now I get to just read it and enjoy it.
Well, that's the point. I mean, I hope people really do sit back and enjoy this because it was a lot of fun to write to begin with.
So let me ask you a little bit about, before you started writing for films, what were you doing before? Tell us a little bit about your own personal life path and what led you to do this work.
Well, my personal background is as a writer and journalist. I worked for a number of years as a trade magazine editor. And then I went through some personal changes that helped me to connect with some of the metaphysical material that I've become has become very important in my life. And then I essentially just, you know, put the two together. I combined that with my love of film, which has been a lifelong passion of mine, and thus was born the book. I mean, it really was a fusion of a number of different elements of my life that have developed both personally and professionally and came together to form this work.
It's a terrific book, and it really covers a lot of movies over the past. You sort of focus on recent films, and I would say the past 30 or 40 years or so. And the choices that you made in it were, I think, right on in terms of the perfect films to write about this idea of conscious creation. So why don't you tell our audience a little bit about exactly how you define the term conscious creation?
Sure, no problem. Conscious creation is basically a concept where you combine your thoughts, beliefs, and intents with the power of the universe, the energy of the universe, to create the external reality that you experience. Now, that might sound a little clinical, but you can summarize that very simply as in terms of phrases like you create your own reality, or thoughts become things, or even in very simple terms, life is what you make of it.
So when do you see that this idea of conscious creation really is coming into its full form in throughout the independent and Hollywood motion picture business? Around what time period, or is it has it always been there?
Well, I think it's always been there to a certain extent, even if a lot of filmmakers didn't necessarily recognize it as such or call it or label it in that particular way. Much of the work to help develop this concept was put forth by an author named Jane Roberts back in the 60s, 70s, and early 80s. And she published a number of different books on the subject and covered it very comprehensively from a number of different angles. And I think, you know, it began to, those concepts began to seep into the minds of the film world, the people who were writing and creating pictures. And over the course of the time since then, it's gradually been coming forward more and more obviously in terms of the films that are being made and in terms of the way the concepts are being depicted on the screen. But the roots of it actually, I think, go back, you know, quite a ways, as I say, even if the creators of the films themselves didn't necessarily call it that.
Mm-hmm. I think this trend is, I've described this sort of current incarnation, you call it conscious creation, I call it, we're living in a time of what I term visionary entertainment,
okay,
which is really a definition of the convergence of motion pictures, technology, human consciousness. I mean, it's all kind of coming together and forming in a way that I think is in previous history in terms of the art of film has not really come into its full potential. And I think that along the way that we've seen what I would call watershed films that have sort of started the trend and sort of defined the trend, or at least, you know, were marking points. And you've covered some of those films, especially the recent ones in your book, and actually I want to kind of revisit some of those reviews while we're on the air here. But also, I'd like to take us back into beginning of the history of motion pictures, since we sort of alluded to that just now, and look at the silent films. Have you ever found any films in the silent era that you feel were sort of forerunners of this idea of conscious creation?
To be honest, I haven't really studied a lot of silent film all that well, so it's not an area that I would be able to speak to, you know, in any great detail. Mm-hmm. But I found that probably when you start looking maybe in the 30s, particularly when you look at films by directors like, say, Frank Capra, you start to see some of these ideas begin to merge. Now, again, I doubt seriously that he ever heard of the concept or used the term conscious creation, but many of the principles and the ideas that are embodied in the philosophy can be seen in any of the, in most of the pictures that he made. Mm-hmm. And that just kind of continued through there, slowly, gradually gaining steam over the years. And as the concept became more prevalent in the minds of people in the country and people in Hollywood, it began to emerge, you know, quite a bit more. I would say probably around 1990 is really when the trend started to take off in a bigger way, when the filmmakers began to be a bit more overt in terms of the way they're going to address these subjects. And it's just continued since then. So,
well, you mentioned in the introduction that that Star Wars was a big marking point for you personally, and you sort of you pointed at the screen and said, "That's what I'm thinking about." So when you started talking about the Force, now I, you know, when I first saw Star Wars, I saw it at the Chinese Theater on Hollywood Boulevard on about the fifth or sixth day that it opened, and my mind was a little closed in that regard, but you got it in a way that I didn't get it at that time. It took a little while for me to understand that, you know, the spirituality that's inherent throughout the whole Star Wars series, especially in episode, what we call now episode 4.
Mm-hmm.
But really, I think that for me, where this started to kind of come together are a lot of films that I saw, especially growing up personally, during the 1960s, when I saw that, you know, there were some really films that took on a whole new way of looking at things. And I think for me, and I've talked about this many times in this program, which was when I first saw 2001 A Space Odyssey.
Mm-hmm.
So, and you write about that in Get the Picture. What are your thoughts about looking back at that film now as far as its time period and its relevancy to, you know, today's evolvement of consciousness?
Well, 2001, I wrote about in a chapter in the book called Road Trip, which I thought was kind of appropriate given the nature of the story. Basically, the chapter called Road Trip has to do with the idea of understanding how our beliefs evolve over time. And how they, in turn, affect the realities that we experience and create for ourselves. And in the case of 2001, I thought it was very relevant because it was really addressing that concept, not only in terms of looking at ourselves individually, but looking at ourselves as a species. When you go from the dawn of man all the way to the point where we're exploring the heavens and even, you know, beginning to go beyond that, I think really... it's showing how we have grown, we've evolved, we've gotten increasingly more sophisticated in terms of the things that we achieve and strive for and things along those lines. And right now, I would say that that film is very relevant for what we're doing. I mean, even though we're well past the date that's in the title, I think it's really bringing to bear a lot of the ideas that we as a collective species are on the verge of beginning to experience more openly and more consciously for ourselves, to get to the point of going from a less evolved, I guess you could say, form of awareness to one where we are more consciously aware of what we're creating and what we're experiencing. So in that respect, I think the film is really very, very relevant, even though it's, you know, over 40 years old now.
Yeah, can you believe it?
It is hard to believe, you know, and especially since, you know, when you see it too, it the special effects, for example, have held up so well over time.
Yeah, that's what amazes me quite a bit. I had a chance to interview Keir Dillon and Gary Lockwood, and I do have that interview on video, so I'll be releasing that soon. And they said some very interesting things about the film, which were a surprise to me. And I'll give you a few tidbits of it, because I thought it was very interesting, because especially the way that Keir related to it. First of all, there were scenes that were shot that they thought were terrific that were not included in the film. And in fact, all the extra footage, Keir said, was actually destroyed by Kubrick personally.
Wow.
So he didn't want anything to exist outside of exactly what the film ended up to be. No, you know, no extra scenes, no nothing. I mean, the film is what it is. I mean, he was that kind of, I could say, just obsessive about it. And that was, you know, there's more to that. So when you, and stay tuned, because that interview will be coming on the show in the future. And there's some surprising things they said about the production and about shooting and about Kubrick and his whole mindset in making this movie, which I feel, I'm very glad I feel I got something like historical in the can. So
I can't wait to hear that.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. Anyway, let's jump, I want to jump back a little bit, because there's a lot of films that I feel, as a matter of fact, I think you could write a book, and I'd like to kind of give you some ideas as far as what I think some of the things that could be included in it. Which is more about the earlier phases of movie, because I've studied this idea about, you know, conscious creation, and there's so many movies. I mean, if you go all the way back to a small film made in the silent era, actually even before the 1920s, I think it's a film called Civilization by Thomas Ince.
Okay.
And go that far back, and even you can look at a film like Metropolis, because there's a lot of pieces, and that's the first major science fiction film.
Mm-hmm.
There's also even a version of Mysterious Island that's actually half silent, half sound in 1929. And I think in a way you could also put classic films into this idea of conscious creation. There's a lot of films that can be applied to it, even films like King Kong and Wizard of Oz, of course, also, that people have, they've established even archetypes in consciousness, where people even, you know, play out roles in their lives that are aligned with these movies that they saw when they were young that have a tremendous effect on how they view themselves in the world. And I've discussed this before. So in that idea, as people look at movies in a certain way and apply them to their lives, which is really, I think, is your intent here in the book, is what do you see some of the things? Describe to me a way that someone can view a film, in your opinion, and use it in a way that's self-empowering and self-actualizing.
Well, I think one of the things that's important for listeners to understand in terms of the way I put the book together in general is it takes readers through a kind of conscious creation roadmap for going from the point where they theoretically know little or nothing about how the process works to the point where they are fairly adept at being able to handle it. And it starts with just, basically becoming aware that this process is at work and out in play out there, and then moving them through a number of different principles that they can use to, better make it work, such things as understanding your power of choice, understanding your power of change, facing fears, understanding the evolution of beliefs, understanding how everything is connected, learning how to draw upon some untapped abilities that you might have either psychically or in the use of meditation or dreams or things like that. Working all of those elements together to create a kind of mindset for yourself that you're using to create a reality that you're more satisfied with. Now, when you take that idea and you apply it to movies, I don't know that you would necessarily find too many films that address all of them, but you certainly find movies that address maybe several of them. So what I do is I keep those ideas in mind that I just talked about in terms of the roadmap, and I sort of use them as a kind of a filter as I'm watching the films that are on the screen now to see which ones they reflect, best, and then use that as an example to illustrate how those principles work. So what I suggest to readers is that they go in, keeping these various ideas in mind, and then as they're watching the film, see which ones they can most readily tie to the picture. Now, not every movie is going to be good at it either. I mean, some certainly are going to be far better than others. I don't know that, for example, a lot of the summer blockbusters or some of the silly romantic comedies out there are going to be your best examples of showing these ideas at work. But then, you do have some that cover it pretty well, too. So,
well, I think that all movies have this aspect of the potential for a transformative outcome in terms of viewing it. And as you said, some films do it better than others. For example, like take Field of Dreams. I mean, that became a whole mindset. And people constantly say that if you build it, they will come. I mean, it's now ingrained in the consciousness. And even if you've traveled to Iowa, if anyone has gone through there, the baseball field that they actually shot this movie at they've kept it the same way it was when they shot the movie. It's almost like a shrine. It's amazing. People go there and they have experiences of, like spiritual awakening. And it's all your state of mind. There's nothing really there except what's there. I mean, it's all bringing back what's in the film and the concepts that are in it. So you can see how people, they ingrain these ideas in movies and it becomes part of the sort of like a mythic consciousness that's permeated throughout, viewers all over the world who see these films. I'm staggered by that, how people take on movies as their own, as their own like self identity. Well, talk a little bit about that idea. I'm sure you've kind of run through your head on that one.
Yeah, I mean, there are a number of classic films that, as you say, have become so ingrained in the culture. 2001, like we just spoke about, The Wizard of Oz, another one. Field of Dreams, any number of those pictures that have become such a part of the consciousness that it almost becomes second nature in terms of how you view the world as a result of the ideas that these films have planted into people's consciousness and that they now in turn use as part of their belief system to create the reality they experience.
Right, exactly. It becomes part of their belief system.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That shows you the power of film. You sit in that dark theater, and as I've said before, watching a movie, especially in a theater, if you have a good theater, I would recommend the smaller ones. You don't really get this experience in the big, giant theaters, but the smaller theaters that have a good projection, good screen, you sort of fall into this place of you're in an alternate reality, and actually the act of watching a movie, because it's the way that your brain operates, you know, in a scientific manner. I've talked about this with Dr. Joe Dispenza before in an earlier interview, that there's actually certain things that are happening in the brain that allow you to have experiences that are higher states of consciousness. You're actually in an altered state of reality when you watch a movie. I'm sure that everybody has the experience of when they're so into a film, they're, you know, and the phone rings and that jump, or somebody taps them on the shoulder, and you know, they kind of come out of their stupor, and they go, what? Because they're so into it, their mind is totally locked into it, and that has a good side and it has a bad side. And we've discussed that on this program before about how, especially like through advertising and repeated patterns in all these movies that use the strobe effect, you know, those are, by the filmmaker, it's done specifically on purpose, especially like in horror films, to get that response out of, you know, the audience. And they're very exacting. Filmmakers who understand this are very exacting technically about how they approach that. Of course, the master at this was Alfred Hitchcock.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't cover his movie. That's a little bit before what you cover in this film, but just give me your take on Hitchcock.
Well, Hitchcock, you know, one of his cardinal rules was you never show the act taking place, never show the unspeakable act taking place, because he believed that your mind was always capable of creating anything far more horrific than he could actually show. And he's right. I mean, when you look at, you know, movies like Psycho or Vertigo or things like that, you know, you don't have to see the horror taking place. Your mind is doing it for you. So that shows right there the power of belief at work, because your beliefs about what you think you're seeing certainly create a much more evocative reaction than anything that you could possibly see plainly, you know, in terms of what's actually on the screen. in the case of Vertigo, I placed that in the book, in the chapter I have on Facing Fears, simply because it's such an excellent example of somebody not only overcoming a fear of heights, but a fear of heights not just in the literal sense, but also in terms of the psychological sense as well. Mm-hmm. Particularly from the standpoint of scaling the heights of ecstasy. So he was a tremendous master at showing the power of belief and how that and plays out in terms of what you're creating in your own mind.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure everyone has their favorites that, as they're listening to the show now, they're thinking of the movies that they've enjoyed in maybe in a different way. And that's really opening that door in your mind and looking at films differently, other than just a mindless entertainment, which is really, you know, is the purpose of this program. And I know that it's the purpose of Get the Picture, just inherent in the title itself. Like, do you get the picture? So I like that that approach that you've created. I want to go back a little bit, and you didn't say anything in the book about spiritual cinema and Stephen Simon, except talking about Indigo, which you did. I'll be very frank here. When I first got familiar with that concept, I had written, you know, going back in the college, a term paper that I called Films and Society when I first started studying this. And because I, you know, as you start to become an adult and evolve spiritually and see things differently, you start to have a different take on things that you grew up with, and that was my involvement personally. But when I hit the idea of, you know, Stephen Simon's book about spiritual cinema, at first I thought that he kind of nailed it. Then over time, I realized that he had missed a lot. And I started thinking about, as you know, about films differently, and that's why I came up with the idea of visionary entertainment to describe that. And I've written some essays on that on my blog site, spiritoffilm.net. But I think that you've defined it a little bit more sharply in Get the Picture. And with conscious creation, and I really like the idea that you've established it, and the approach that you've taken in the book to work people, as you said, through a process of really understanding their own personal self-evolvement and how to use films in a way that I think that people kind of do, but they're not aware of it. So taking that step for all of you listeners out there to really, you know, remember that this is an hour and a half of your time, or 2 hours, or longer, and also, you know, becoming obsessed with a, you know, with a film or with a series like Star Wars or Harry Potter or something like that, make sure that your time is spent well. You know, we have so little time in our lives, and we, I think it's good to start looking at movies as a choice rather than just, you know, a way to unwind or you know, shut off your brain or something like that. I would say do just the opposite, that become a master of your life and use films as a tool for your own personal evolvement. And I think that's part of the reason that we're having this discussion today, and I hope that people take that attitude, because I think for me personally, it's what I strive to get across to people, and I'm very glad to have yet another tool, such as your book, to do that.
I couldn't have said that better.
Well, thanks. Thanks. I want to, again, look at the evolvement of this idea throughout film history, and kind of I want to go back and pick up where I left off in the 30s and get into the 40s. What do you feel, such as the period of going into the shadow after World War II and the evolvement of the genre called film noir, and that evolvement, do you feel that that was, looking at the paralleling social consciousness and movies, that was a point where, well, I'll just let you answer the question. What do you feel was the significance of film noir in terms of the consciousness and, you know, after the World War II period?
Well, I think, you know, during almost any period in history, the films that are coming out are going to reflect the consciousness of what's taking place. And I think after World War II, even though there was this tremendous sense of relief when the war was finally over, you were entering the period of the Cold War, in which people didn't feel as though they could necessarily trust one another, and they had a lot of these shadow aspects coming out. And I think the film noir really was a perfect representation cinematically of what was going on in the minds and the moods of people at the time. Clearly, it was a creation of the beliefs that people were holding in the mass consciousness, and as a result, it showed up on the screen. In that respect, like I say, I don't know that it's necessarily any different from what goes on in almost any other period throughout history with film, because they're going to show just what's going on at the time.
Okay, I want to jump into talking about what we call in America foreign films, and the classic foreign films, and some of the classic, the directors of that established, I think, new ways of making films. What do you get a sense of that Ingmar Bergman's role was in looking at the deep psyche of human beings through his films? Give a little bit of your ideas about Ingmar.
Well, I think he really wanted to push us to get down deep inside and see what's in that abyss that we maybe up to that point had previously just glossed over or ignored or so forth. Want us to see exactly what's deep down inside there, for better or for worse, to help us reconnect with that portion of ourselves that so oftentimes had either been ignored or hadn't been explored fully, and bring it forth on the screen and have it out. Let people take a look and see exactly what's going on in there and what to make of it. It's a lot of, in many ways, I liken what he did with film to the process of divination that a lot of people use in different ways. So oftentimes, the ideas that come out through various forms of divination are buried. They're not seen. And divination brings them to the surface for the person to take a look at and assess and say, what am I going to do about this? And I think his films, in many ways, did the same type of thing.
I want to bring up, get a little bit more modern here, and talk about two films, which I think are my favorites from the period of the 1990s, which are Pleasantville and The Truman Show.
Okay.
I think there are parallels between these two movies because they deal with a reality-based world and a fantasy-based world, and how the two kind of connect in the places where they actually blend, and you can cross over from one to the other. And I really enjoyed some of your comments on the Truman Show that are in this chapter called "Let's See What Happens When We Do This," which I think is, I love that. It's my favorite chapter title. Because you say on page 151, you say this, talking about the character of Truman, you say that the more confident he grows in, oh, I should go back here a little bit. I say here, Truman provides us with an excellent example of someone genuinely coming awake as a conscious creator. As the process begins, we first watch him use his powers of perception more effectively, not only to observe his world, but also to analyze it to see what's behind the surface qualities. This, in turn, helps fuel his use of his intuition and, subsequently, a more balanced application of the magical approach in framing his belief. At this point, he's not so much focused on forming primary beliefs as questioning existing ones to see if they merit attention, reconfiguration, or replacement. The more confident he grows in this, the more willing he is to exert his free will and power of choice. And the more he does this, the more aware he grows of the wider range of probabilities open to him, making it eminently easier to evaluate and embrace change in his life. He takes charge of his existence to seek out a reality that fulfills his dreams, desires, and aspirations, one that allows him to live authentically with conditions that work to his benefit. This is indeed conscious creation in full flower. I think that paragraph and everything I read in this book helps, and the film itself defines the process for that spiritual unfoldment for someone. And I see a lot of parallels to Pleasantville in Truman Show. And I think, as I said, I like to see the films actually like it, run them in the same evening because there's so many connections there. So that's another thing that you can do with movies is play around with them like that. So talk a little bit about what you think are some of the parallels in the films.
Well, certainly you're seeing characters dealing with the power of change. That's probably the most important thing in both films. As Truman evaluates the reality he's experiencing, he's trying to decide, is this correct or is this not correct, or do I want to get something better for myself? You also see the same thing going on with the characters in Pleasantville, particularly the people who were part of the television series that the main characters step into. They're beginning to see that this very simplistic life that they've been leading up to this point isn't necessarily all that there is, and that they can experience other things for themselves that had previously been untried. I think both are very significant from the standpoint of understanding, from a conscious creation perspective, that we are free to explore the many probabilities of existence that are available to us. Not just talking about things that are flights of fancy, but even just the regular, everyday, mundane things. So many times we will find ourselves getting locked into belief systems where we'll say, I didn't have a choice in the matter, or I couldn't change the circumstances. Well, these films show clearly that that's not the case, that it's very easy to do that if you allow yourself to stay open to the idea and employ the process to make that happen. And in the case of The Truman Show, some of the things that he does to change his reality, we'd probably look at it and say, well, that's not terribly, important or significant, but to him it's a revelation because it's a big step forward from the reality that he's always known and experienced, and now gets to try something different. The same thing with the characters in Pleasantville. You see them stepping out of their rather sheltered existence and seeing things that, we might take for granted, but to them, hey, these are, this is sliced bread being invented. So in that standpoint, they both really help to, I think, make the case to people who would perhaps be a little more closed off to exploring new ideas and say, hey, if they can do it, you can do it too.
And my favorite part of Pleasantville is still the opening line where it says, TV time, you're soaking in it.
Yeah.
When I saw that for the first time, I just fell off my chair laughing. I had to shut the movie off because I thought that was just so perfect because it describes the mindset that people get into when they get up, you know, totally absorbed in watching cinema or TV shows or that you're literally soaked, like you're bathing in it. You're soaking in it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, I mean, that's one of the things that, you know, you were mentioning earlier when you do get into a state of altered consciousness while you're watching the film. And in many ways, I try to put myself there in the same way simply because I really want to absorb the ideas and the messages that these films are trying to get across. So I purposely take steps when I watch films to encourage that. You know, I turn the phone off, and if I'm watching a movie in the theater, a lot of times I will try to sit as close as possible so I have fewer distractions around me. It literally is like trying to, you know, shut out the existing world so I can find myself immersed totally within the story.
Yeah, I think filmmakers themselves tend to have the same behavioral patterns.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, one of the things I found in the days when I was working as a magazine editor, you do become very absorbed in what it is that you're creating. And in this case, even though you're just watching a film passively, I still find myself getting that same sort of level of absorption watching it that I would get from my work. And, you know, my feeling is if you're going to get yourself into it, you know, go all the way with it. Don't go halfway because, you know, if you want to do that, you can listen to the radio or, you know, go for a walk in the park or something like that. I don't know. I mean, just something it's something that I really feel that we need to devote attention to get the full benefit from it.
Yeah. And I tell people, I remember this commercial probably about maybe 10 years ago when these big screen TVs started first coming out, and it was a commercial for Sony, and it was like this family is on this, you know, this cliff, and it's a plateau looking out like at the Grand Canyon, if you've ever been to the Grand Canyon, and at the edge of this, you know, plateau looking out in this vast, incredible, beautiful expanse of nature, there's the same image on a big screen TV, and the family is huddled around looking at the television set and ignoring the reality.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, what a marvelous metaphor for what's happening with people's consciousness today. And it was actually funny, but it was also very sad because we tend to ignore the world around us sometimes in our busy lives and not seeing the beauty that's right in front of us as we're walking around, especially in nature. And there was a TV show years ago that was on called Northern Exposure. And I always remember this line. It was one of my favorite shows ever. I always remember this line where the young character who was a filmmaker wanted to, you know, go out and shoot this movie, this eagle and everything like that. And the one of his, you know, tribal elders said to him, "So what would matter more, what's more important, a film of an eagle or the actual eagle itself?"
Mm-hmm.
And it sort of makes you think film should be a doorway for people to go out and experience the reality of life, not to become obsessed with media and saturated in it and literally be soaking in it at the peril of ignoring what's truly happening around us. And I think that's, if we use the techniques and ideas that are in your book, I think people who feel that maybe they're too gripped in that, you know, unwinding through movies can now, you know, take a different look at them. I want to talk about two more things in the time that we have left, because we were referring to before about watching a movie and kind of focusing on it, because each film, I think, creates its own world, creates its own reality, and its own sort of laws of time and space even. And one of the things that I've seen develop over time in the history of cinema, in not only the construction of films in terms of editing, but also the ideas of how movies deal with this aspect of time shifting. And as we get into more of the modern era, you'll see that films, because we've been educated in this visual language, that the directors and writers and producers of movies have been able to construct new ways where we actually experience time shifting back and forth, and we're able to follow it. If you took a film like, we're going to talk about What the Bleep Do We Know, and show it to an audience in the 1930s, they would not know what to do with it because they haven't developed the awareness of seeing movies evolve over time. And if you can, if most people can do this, and I've tested it, if you see a film from the 20s or the 30s or the 40s or the 50s, most people can kind of identify the era when it was made. And I find that very interesting. So we've developed this visual language over time, but also the ability for filmmakers and audiences to follow this idea of time shifting. And I'm even watching this series of called The Event on NBC, where the story constantly goes, 5 years earlier, right, 3 years, 3 months ago, that kind of a thing. The flashback idea. But I think that What the Bleep Do We Know, and matter of fact, we're going to have Will Arndt back on in his new movie called Ghetto Physics in just a couple of weeks, who made What the Bleep along with Betsy Chassie. And that was actually my first interview years ago. But What the Bleep, I feel, was a big, giant watershed in terms of this idea of conscious creation in the movies. So let's get into What the Bleep, because I think it has a tremendous amount of significance. But not only did it break new ground in terms of the structure of the film, bringing a dramatic storyline together with a documentary, and people at first kind of didn't know what to do with that, but they were able to follow it. So it started a new trend of what I call the talking head movie, of which The Secret was, the follow-up and a good example of it. But I still feel that What the Bleep is definitely a marking point. So what do you feel, looking back at that film now, since it's been, several years, is its significance?
Well, I think it helped to introduce a lot of these ideas to audiences that were previously unaware of them, for one thing. And it did so in a way that made it a bit more understandable and entertaining at the same time, which is important because there was another movie that preceded What the Bleep by about 13 or 14 years called Mind Walk.
Yes.
Where a lot of the same ideas were discussed, but it was very talky. And unless you were really interested in the subject matter, I think a lot of people would very easily tune it out. What the Bleep took the ideas, many of the same ideas that were expressed in Mind Walk, and made them, visual from telling the fictional narrative and instructive from the standpoint of using the talking heads to explain the points. And that particular combination working together was really quite effective, I think, for getting this message through to people who had never given these ideas any kind of a second thought. Very similar to that also, as you mentioned, The Secret. I tend to think of The Secret as being sort of like the 101 version.
Yeah, I agree with you there.
and What the Bleep kind of being like maybe the 201 or 202. In that respect, they both did a great job, I think, in terms of helping to get these concepts across to people who, have never thought about them before.
Mm-hmm.
And in terms of them being, watershed-type productions, absolutely, without a doubt. I mean, you've seen a lot more come out since then, too. You've seen, for example, like The Quantum Activist, another one that just came out, featuring Amit Goswami, who was one of the speakers in What the Bleep.
Yeah, a lot of these speakers who are in that movie and The Secret, they've seen a huge, interest in their work. And some of their work is absolutely marvelous. Mm-hmm. And I have to say that it's good. It just shows you how popular films can make an idea and a concept, and then everyone enjoys the benefits of everything that follows that.
And I think they really benefited from coming out at the right time, too. I mean,
yes,
there have been an awful lot of people for a number of years who have been searching, just in generic terms, for something that's going to give them a spark or give them a direction to go in, because they haven't felt they've received it from either religion or science, or government or any of the so-called official authority-type positions that would give people direction in their lives. And not only has this helped to give them some ideas of how to approach things, but it's also told them that the real power and responsibility for giving the direction in your life is you. And that really resonated, I think, with a lot of people who were feeling, you know, disempowered or, you know, on low energy levels or lost. I mean, these things just really gave them a sense of where to go. And like I say, from the standpoint that they came, that these films came out just at the right time, they really benefited from that.
Yeah, timing in movies is everything.
Absolutely.
It's a film 2 years early, too early or 2 years too late, where we've already seen that. So it's just that filmmakers who are tuned in get the right ideas at the right times, and the films come out and start trends and start, you know, they establish those marking points. And definitely What the Bleep was one of those that came out at just perfectly the right time. Where do you feel that that the whole movie business is going in terms of this idea? Do you think it's becoming a lot more obvious to filmmakers that audiences want these ideas and they're going to be making these films? Or is it just continuing going to be happenstance? Or do you think that consciousness is reflecting these ideas so strongly that we're going to see more of these kinds of conscious creation movies?
Well, one of the things I think I've noticed over the past couple of years is there seems to be kind of a growing, for lack of a better word, polarity in terms of the way the movie business is going. From a lot of the work that's being done by independent filmmakers or consciousness-related filmmakers, they seem to be taking these ideas further and further, coming up with more and more pictures that address these points directly. And at the same time, you've also got films coming out primarily from the larger studios, which seem to be going in the opposite direction, where it's becoming more and more inane all the time.
Such as your most recent post.
Yeah.
on your blog.
So I would say that there was a period where the lines between those two directions were maybe a little more blurred. You know, some of the major filmmakers were considering the idea of perhaps doing some of these consciousness related films a bit more, but either they decided the audience wasn't big enough or they couldn't receive enough funds from it, that they decided to either scrap them all together or just give them kind of window dressing type treatment.
Right.
So I do see a bit of a split going on in terms of the way these materials are being reflected in movies. But in many ways, again, I think that's reflected in terms of the mass consciousness.
Yes.
You know, you see a lot of people who are very heavily involved in understanding and exploring these kinds of concepts. And then you've got a lot of other people who are like, you know, don't bother me at the end of the day. I just want to kick back and watch television. You know,
yeah.
And the films are reflecting that.
Yeah, very much so. I think that the experience of seeing Avatar in 3D sort of took, you know, which I think is a very spiritual film.
Mm-hmm.
Although the plot line we've seen before in a couple other movies, but I think the execution of it was just absolutely marvelous. And I think that there's a lot of, looking at it a number of times, there's a lot of different layers to it. And a lot of people who say, well, we've seen this before. But if you look carefully, there are some very, very crafted, purposely put there ideas that I think that Cameron, who is I think is a kind of a spiritual guy, but he doesn't really let that out in the public. But I think his stories and all of his movies are sort of designed around these ideas of conscious creation. Whether he'll admit to it publicly or not, I don't know. I've never heard him in an interview kind of talk about that. Maybe no one's just asked him the question.
I think if any filmmaker starts to get to be too preachy about it, it's going to turn people off.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they'll say, well, how is this any different from the dissatisfying religious or scientific experiences I had growing up? You know, do I need to really relive them again through the movies that I watch now? I think they like to see the ideas presented in a way so that the viewer gets it without being hit over the head. Because then it really has a lot, the potential to create a lot of these aha moments that drive the points home in such a strong way that the reader, that the viewers really take the ideas and embrace them and make them theirs.
Yeah, it's definitely a process of evolvement in terms of independent filmmakers and Hollywood studios trying to predict trends and they should just trust the instincts of the filmmakers rather than doing something that they feel is going to be commercial, such as, as we were saying before, your most recent post there. We won't mention the film, but you can go to your web, read it. Brent's blog and his post on current films on the Vivid Life website, there are links at spiritoffilm.net. If you go to the post on today's interview, you can find those links. And I just want to, again, thank you for coming on the show today. I've really enjoyed our conversation, and maybe have down the road a bit, we can come back on and catch up on the, just talking about recent films over the past year. Maybe we'll do a once a year kind of an overview of what's happened during that year.
That sounds great.
And kind of explore how things are evolving and changing over time. I'd really enjoy that, to talk about that with you.
I would love that. Thank you so much for having me on the show. I really appreciate it.
Well, it's getting close to the end here, but I want to make sure that everyone knows where to find this book. It's called Get the Picture, Conscious Creation Goes to the Movies. And I just want to just stress that there's been a lot of film compendiums over the years that put movies in a perspective that people, you know, they use it like a dictionary. And I really want to stress that this book can be used as a guide to inspire you to really not only just watch movies and kick back, but really to use them as springboards to your personal transformation. And really read this book with a lot of enthusiasm and take it to heart, because I think that you'll really get a lot out of it, and you'll, I think, enjoy revisiting some of your favorite films, not even realize that they, how much you like certain movies look at them in a whole new way. So, Brent, thanks again. Thanks so much for being on the show today.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Well, everyone, that's, again, we're looking at the end of another program. That's a wrap for our show for this week. I want to thank you for joining us today, and join us again next week as we showcase the very best in movie entertainment that inspires us towards positive change and honors the belief that simple choices can change the world. I wanted to just tell you a little bit about some of the programs that we have coming up before we end today. As I mentioned, that we'll be having an interview with the actors from 2001 A Space Odyssey, Keira DeLay and Gary Lockwood. That's an upcoming program. And we've also got, as I mentioned before, Ghetto Physics with William Arndt and his collaborators on the movie coming up in a couple of weeks. And I'd like to also ask you to send me your ideas for interviews or movies that you'd like me to cover on this program. A lot of people have been emailing about that over the years, and I wanted to just kind of reach out to all of you who are listeners out there and you know, let me know the films that maybe we could talk about, one particular movie that you've enjoyed and would like me to explore in more in depth. So even classic films. We can do a whole show about classic films, which I have some plans next year to actually do some of those on video with clips. So again, thanks for listening today. And of course, you can find out more on the internet about Spirit of Film Conversations at spiritoffilm.net, which is my website. And also, of course, enjoy other programming right here on the Seventh Wave Network channel. That's at seventhwavenetwork.com, and tell your friends where to find our show. So I want to just thank you for listening today. And remember that you are the producer, director, and star of your own movie that's called Your Life. So make it a blockbuster, and it'll be a classic. Until next time, I'm Randy Libero for Spirit of Film Conversations. We'll see you next week.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Seventh Wave Network. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit seventhwavenetwork.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live Internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.